This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome into Sports Talk, Sports Talk Media Network, on a fabulous Monday evening as we go racing at Darlington this weekend. It is race week here in the state of South Carolina, one of two opportunities that we get every year to have the NASCAR scene here in the PD, and certainly looking forward to coverage for you all week long of the official throwback weekend of NASCAR, which to me still makes no sense as to why they're having it on Mother's Day weekend. First off, you can't throw back to an event that usually didn't take place, because Mother's Day, much like Easter, normally was a sacred cow in NASCAR, and you did not run on Mother's Day, nor did you run on Easter. But I know as well as anybody that tradition steps away as soon as money steps in, and so we will go racing this weekend. Official throwback should be fun. I just think it loses a little luster because the throwback weekend, and the throwback race, of course, is the Southern 500 at Darlington, not the Mother's Day weekend race. But nonetheless, it'll be interesting to see the lead up to the event on Sunday, the Goodyear 400, with the 75 greatest drivers in NASCAR history being honored prior to the race. Should be a terrific time. We'll be there, of course. We've got plenty of coverage all week long. As a matter of fact, coming up on the program tonight, we will hear an interview we did last week with Kyle Larson. I think somewhat appropriate considering what happened to him yesterday, because he leads off talking about how he's had no luck. Denny Hamlin made sure of that yesterday when he put his nose to the back end of Kyle Larson and made sure he got past him to win at Kansas. So we'll let you hear from Kyle Larson coming up on the program tonight. Certainly want to hear from you as well. 888-898-2525. Again, 888-898-2525. That's the Sports Talk South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number. Chris Bergen over here near the track Too Tough to Tame at Darlington Raceway in our PD studios. Meantime, Pat Daniel holding things down at our flagship station, The Point in Columbia. Phil Kornblut has the entire week off. So whenever Phil is not with us here on Sports Talk, we go to the bullpen and pull out our ace reliever down in Georgetown as we say hello to Matt Smith as well. Smitty, how was your weekend?
Well, my weekend was good. I'm surprised that – I wonder if NASCAR talked to Noah Gragson after he threw a punch and said, whoa, you got to save that for Cale Yarborough's home track.
No doubt.
The throwback weekend is the one that should have had the fisticuffs.
A very good point. Very good point. But Ross Chastain is becoming a villain in NASCAR, and quite frankly, I'm not so sure that NASCAR doesn't necessarily need somebody like him, that it's easily dislikable, much like Kyle Busch is. Kyle Busch is probably the most polarizing figure in NASCAR. I don't know that Ross Chastain has gotten to that point, but he is certainly one of the more despised guys in the garage, and I think Noah Gragson had had enough of him yesterday. And I was joking with a buddy of mine earlier today. He said the worst thing you could have done if you were Noah Gragson is, or I guess it was... Yeah, it was Gragson who grabbed Ross Chastain's uniform. And then you can't grab the uniform. You got to make sure that you grab the hands at least. Make sure they don't end up on your chest or in your face. But yeah, just a crazy way to wrap up the race yesterday, which turned out to be an extremely good one in Kansas, as much poo-pooing as Phil and I did on the program in the lead up to Kansas last weekend. But we'll have a lot of good stuff for you all week long as we get sent to go racing at Darlington. All right, 888-898-2525. We will get to your phone calls as the evening unfolds. We will also hear from Jim Thoman, of course, his weekly Monday visit, the former assistant with the University of South Carolina baseball program, also former head coach at Middle Tennessee and Liberty. Get his take on, Smitty, what turned out to be a rather interesting weekend in baseball. First off, Clemson, a month ago, left for dead. Eric Backich, to his credit, has turned that team around, and they are playing about as well as anybody in college baseball right now, coming off another ACC series win. They get a sweep over Louisville, and right now the Tigers look like one of the teams going into the tournament, Smitty. I'm not so sure you'd want to face it. I think now they have certainly played their way into the tournament as they have moved now back inside the top 25.
Oh, absolutely. And they are playing great baseball. As a matter of fact, we were I was talking with you when Clemson I was on the program with you when Clemson was heading down to Tallahassee. You might remember this. And I think they were at the time they were 2-7, and they ended up going down to Tallahassee and dropping the first one there. And since then, of course, they've won 12 of 14. That dropped them to 2-8 in conference play. And you said left for dead. They just did not have the right chemistry. Something was missing. Well, they fixed it all now. And look, you know, everything that's gone wrong with South Carolina recently has gone right for Clemson. They've gotten healthy, and then the pitching has stepped up. Clemson tweeted out today a terrific stat. Their last five games, the Clemson pitching staff boasts an ERA of 2.66. Wow. If you do that and you have players like Cam Cannarella and Caden Grice and Billy Amick and Will Taylor dotting that lineup, you're going to win a lot of games, and it's exactly what they've done.
And they have a huge game coming up on Wednesday night. As a matter of fact, the team they are playing, it's also as big for them as it is for Clemson, as they'll travel over to Conway and take on Coastal. We are going to effort to be out there for that game because, Smitty, in terms of regular season contests that aren't within the conference, I'm not so sure this isn't one of the bigger games in the state all season, considering where these two teams are right now, with both Coastal and Clemson battling for potentially hosting a regional. This may swing the tide one way or the other, depending on which team wins. And you'll remember Coastal got embarrassed by Clemson early in the season when the two teams met up at Doug Kingsmore.
That's right. Coastal owes them one, right? And you're right also about midweek games. You know, they don't always carry a lot of meaning, but this one might, especially to Coastal Carolina, because it's an opportunity for them to knock off a name, and they didn't take that advantage earlier in the season. Of course, this is a feather in Clemson's cap because of where Coastal's RPI sits. So, this is a big midweek game, and here's the cool part. We'll be there. We'll take it in, and we'll be reporting live and hosting Sports Talk there. And it's just a big-time game here in the state. And having said that, it's a good thing we've got it because it seems like everything else in the state's being canceled.
Which is unfortunate, to say the least, for sure. Now, you were talking about pitching. Let's roll over to the other side of the coin because a team that about the time Clemson began to turn the corner, we were thinking this team is a lock not only to host a regional, but probably to be a national seed, perhaps the number one team in the country, the number one seed going into the NCAA tournament. And the last couple of weeks, South Carolina, Smitty, has not looked like the club they were back in April and certainly even the beginning of May. Coming off that Florida sweep, they have not looked the same. Injuries have played a big, big role. But you talked about starting pitching. The last two weekends against Auburn and Kentucky, in which the Gamecocks have lost 5 of 6, their ERA is up near 10, and they've given up 30 earned runs in 27 and a third innings. So maybe, is it just, I'd hate to use the word excuse, because I don't think it is an excuse. I think it is a valid reason. South Carolina's injuries have dismantled that ball club. But is it as simple to say, as this team is hurt, and once they get healthy, they're going to be fine? Or are there other problems that this team is starting to suffer through, including in the starting pitching role with both Will Sanders and Jake Mahoney? Or Jack Mahoney?
You know, it's a question we'll ask. Yeah, it's a question we'll ask Jim Thoman later tonight. I'm curious myself to see how this plays out for South Carolina. Obviously, the injuries have hampered them, and every team is going to go through injuries. And South Carolina was healthier at the beginning of the year, and they stacked up. They put a lot of hay in the barn, stacking up a lot of wins early on. I don't, what were they, 30-4? Something incredible. Some incredible start. And we're setting all sorts of records and tying other records, you know, about what teams that, I guess, Bobby Richardson and Ray Tanner had coached. So everything was going their way, and they did have injuries. But, Chris, you just hit on something. The starting pitching hasn't been good. And think of this. How about this compound sentence? South Carolina is 36-11. They are still a top 10 team. They are battling to be one of the 8 national seeds. And their Friday night starter has an ERA hovering around 6. The ability to do that and hang in there and roll with those punches, I don't know whether Will Sanders' arm is tired. And this goes for all the starting pitchers for South Carolina. Do they have tired arms, or what is the issue? Because as you said, when they get healthy, you know, Kentucky was putting up, what, 7 and 14 runs. I mean, you can't expect your offense, even when healthy, to put up double-digit runs in conference play. So the pitching simply has to get better, and I don't know what the answer is. I don't know whether Will Sanders needs another weekend off or what it is, but for his ERA to go from where I believe it was in the lower fours last year to this year almost at six. And he's just one of the issues, but that is a major one because that's Friday night. And the first thing that does is when Will Sanders struggles out of the gate on Friday night, you put your bullpen in a hole. Right away, you start bringing in the parade of relievers, and that means those guys are not going to be as available or as effective on Saturday and Sunday. It's a domino effect, and it's going the wrong direction for South Carolina right now.
Well, I think you saw it play itself out yesterday, just what you were chatting about the bullpen maybe being overtaxed against Kentucky, because yesterday Matthew Becker in the third inning, it was obvious he didn't have it. And he had a couple of walks hit by a pitch with the bases loaded, and Kentucky went from a 2-2 ball game to a 5-2 contest after that third inning. And Smitty, you just felt like, well, first off, why didn't the Gamecocks not have anybody warming up in the bullpen, as it was fairly obvious that Becker was going through, he was laboring. As a matter of fact, he threw almost 50 pitches in the third inning alone yesterday. You would have thought they'd gotten him out of there, but they may not have had anybody else available. And then you get Eli Jurzenbeck to come in yesterday, and he perhaps gets hurt as well. Noah Hall still trying to figure out what his status is moving forward and whether or not they'll be able to get him back. All of that being said, though, this is the most amazing thing to me. They go in there, they get swept by Kentucky, and their RPI drops one slot. They go from, what, number two in the country to number three. And I'm all for playing really, really good teams. And let's face it, South Carolina's schedule is as good as you'll see. The teams that they face in the SEC are as good as anybody plays all year. But there ought to be some value, don't you think, to RPI numbers and not just playing teams, but beating teams? You shouldn't get credit just for playing teams in your conference, should you?
You've got to take that up with the formula itself. See, your problem is with math, is with mathematics. That's your problem.
I always have a problem with math.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I've got a real issue with algebra. I'm going to speak to it later. But I agree with you. I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. It feels like there should be, a bigger demerit, right, for going up to Kentucky and getting swept. And there will be in the eyes of those that make these decisions in the end. You know, they'll look at all of that. All of that will come into play. The human element, you know, will come into play. But the way the RPI works, you know, I'm with you. We went over this during basketball season as well. Maybe the formula needs to be adjusted, but the way it sits, if you do look at the SEC top to bottom, we're talking about potentially 11 teams making the NCAA tournament. It is like the AL East right now. It is so tough top to bottom in the SEC, and even the teams that don't have good records, you know, when they go to midweek play, they often clean up. Even though they don't have good conference records. So it is that tough. That's one thing I can say. It is absolutely that tough in the SEC. As a matter of fact, I threw a note here about how tough it is in playing on the road in the SEC right now. This was tweeted out earlier by one of the SEC writers that LSU goes on the road and drops two of three. Mm-hmm. South Carolina goes on the road and gets swept. And I don't know. There's a host of others. I think Alabama or Vanderbilt.
Alabama beat Vandy.
On the road. Yeah, there you go. Vandy goes on the road. Here it is. So LSU drops two of three at Auburn. South Carolina was a top five team. They get swept at Kentucky. Florida goes on the road. They're ranked number four in the country. They drop two of three at A&M. Vanderbilt ranked fifth in the country. A lot of people's favorite to win the College World Series before the season began. They go on the road to Alabama. They drop two of three. And Tennessee's ranked 18th going into the weekend. They drop two of three on the road at Georgia. Yes, the SEC is that tough. And if you look up and down at how tough it is in terms of how home teams do, it is a big, big advantage in the SEC, more so than in other conferences. It just happens to be the way it plays out in that one.
We've got baseball going on this afternoon that we'll keep an eye on as well. The D2 ranks as Newberry and Lincoln Memorial trying to decide the South Atlantic Conference Championship today up in Kodak, Tennessee. Newberry coming out of the loser's bracket would have to beat the Rail Splitters. Yes, that is right. Rail Splitters of Lincoln Memorial. Newberry would have to beat them twice. They've already taken care of one half of that, a 5-4 win earlier this afternoon. Now they're in game two. They go to the bottom of the first inning of game two. The winner claims the sack title, and Newberry and Lincoln Memorial are scoreless, though the Wolves do have two men aboard and one out in the bottom of the first. We'll keep you posted on that as we move through the program. As we mentioned, we'll hear from Kyle Larson on the show tonight. Plus, we'll also check in with Jim Thoma and get his take on what Smitty and I have been describing, some baseball, what's going on with the Gamecocks, how impressed is he with what Clemson has done here the last month or so, and how dangerous could they be going into not just the final couple of weeks of the regular season, but also the ACC tournament and beyond. 888-898-2525. Again, 888-898-2525. Pat Daniel ready to load you up back home in Columbia. We will take a quick time out, come back, hit some other news notes of the day, and then get to your phone calls here this evening. Your thoughts on the baseball weekend, racing at Darlington, whatever is on your mind. We are here to unfurl the opening day of the week. As we come off the weekend, I want to get your take as well. So 888-898-2525. And did you know that since 2002, more than $999 million in lottery proceeds have been used to support K-12 programs here in our states? Learn more about the South Carolina Education Lottery's impact at seeducationlottery.com/educationwins. Playing for fun is a win for education. Coming out of the break, we'll introduce this week's poll question and get to your phone calls on a Monday here on Sports Talk. Join us, won't you?
Imagine a scrapbook filled with all your favorite memories of 75 years of NASCAR gone by. Now imagine that scrapbook going 190 miles per hour.
Have you ever? No, I've never!
You don't have to imagine it. You need to get to Darlington, where the drivers of today tackle the track too tough to tame, just like they did your first time. NASCAR Throwback Weekend at Darlington Raceway, May 12th through the 14th. Get your tickets today at darlingtonraceway.com.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Hope, life, and the great Palmetto. What do these things have in common? Scholarship dollars. The SC Hope, the Life, and the Palmetto Fellow Scholarships are funded by the lottery players of this great state. And after 20 years, you've invested over $7 billion in education. $7 billion. Impressive. The South Carolina Education Lottery. When you play, we all win.
Race week here in the state of South Carolina. They go racing in Darlington Friday with the Truck Series Saturday afternoon, the Xfinity Series, and then, of course, on Sunday, the Cup Series and the Goodyear 400. Plus, they will honor the 75 greatest drivers in NASCAR history as part of the Throwback Weekend festivities. We'll hear from Kerry Tharp, president of Darlington Raceway. He'll carve out some time for us tomorrow night, and then, of course, on Friday, final preview heading into the weekend with our good friend Jeff Owens inside the Fast Lane. 888-898-2525. Chris, Pat, and Smitty, if you'd like to join us here this evening. Speaking of Pat, Pat, how was your weekend?
Sorry, I was fixing the camera there for a second. had a great weekend. Watched a lot of sports. May or may not have worked on my freckle tan a little bit out at the lake. Was trying to enjoy some nice weather. Uh-huh. Just kicked my feet up and relaxed a little bit, which was a lot of fun. It was a solid weekend. Loving this South Carolina weather. And this is the little sweet spot, you know, where we've got about 4 to 6 weeks before it gets too hot and too buggy.
Mm-hmm. Smitty, I'm assuming your invitation, much like mine, to join Pat in the out at the lake got lost in the mail this weekend. Is that the case?
Yeah, he didn't take any of my calls from Friday afternoon on.
So wait, the pigeon got lost along the way? Because I sent it old school mail a little bit. But
it certainly
right
did.
To voicemail.
All right, let's hit some other news notes, and then we'll get to your phone calls here this evening on Sports Talk as we get rolling on this Monday. We'll hear from Kyle Larson on the program tonight as well. Our new poll question that Phil, believe it or not, Phil, even though he's on vacation, cannot take time away from the show. That's how dedicated he is. So he's put up an interesting one, I think. The odds have been released. I kind of missed this. Didn't realize that we've already gotten to that point. With the Gamecocks and their football season forthcoming as underdogs to North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, and Clemson, they are 2-point underdogs to the Tar Heels, 3-plus touchdown underdogs to Georgia, 2-touchdown underdogs to Tennessee, and Clemson about a touchdown favorite at the end of the season. So our question is, what's the best bet for a straight-up upset? Thereby, South Carolina wins. Well, logic would tell you that with a 2-point margin between the Gamecocks and Tar Heels, that would be the way to go. And 77% of you have noticed that of over 280 votes thus far. But 77% of you saying North Carolina is the best bet for a straight upset. Georgia, Tennessee sort of towards the bottom, and Clemson in the middle, but by a wide margin behind North Carolina. Tigers at 15%. Of those lines, Smitty, because you pay very close attention, a whole lot more so than the rest of us do on the program, which of those surprised you at the margin?
That's a good question. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think Tennessee, the anticipation is that this year they're just continuing to recruit at a high level, and South Carolina will not sneak up on the Volunteers. Plus, that one's at Rocky Top this year. So that's a tough game. So that line doesn't surprise me. I was a little surprised UNC came out as a favorite over South Carolina. When you look at the way the two teams played down the stretch at the end of the season, I felt like South Carolina is a team coming in with a little bit more momentum, so that surprises me. Now, of course, we'll wait and see what the former Alabama baseball coach has to say about these lines. I always follow what he's doing, try to bet on his heels. But I'd have to agree with everybody that's voted already. I mean, I think South Carolina, North Carolina, I mean, 2 points, that's almost a coin flip anyway when you look at the way that Vegas does the math. But I was a little surprised. I kind of figured the Gamecocks would come out as a 3-point favorite over the Heels.
Is that the value people are placing on Drake May and his ability at quarterback? They think he's probably the best player in the game?
They probably do, but you know what? Look at Drake May and his receivers. And look, he's got talent at North Carolina. He does. But what I saw at the end of the year, the chemistry between Spencer Rattler and Juice Wells, I don't think they really take a back seat to Drake May. I know that I retweeted earlier, if you go to @SportsTalkSC, you can see that On3Sports has the top 10 quarterback prospects from this year. And I think Drake May is number 2, facing both Clemson and South Carolina this year. Joe Milton from Tennessee is at number 7. And I have mad respect for Drake May. But South Carolina has a history, ask DJ Uiagalelei, of making things tough on quarterbacks. I know they have a lot of pieces to replace in terms of the pass rush, but you know South Carolina's going to have defensive backs. That's their calling card. It's one thing that Clayton White does a good job against. So I'm a little surprised. I agree with you. Drake May probably on paper is the best player, but you're talking about Spencer Rattler and Juice Wells. That might be the best quarterback wide receiver combo in that game.
All right, you can vote up on our Twitter page, as Smitty pointed out, at SportsTalkSC up on Twitter. All right, let's kick things off on the phone lines on the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number as we head off to visit with our good friend Gamecock Larry, who joins us tonight from Swansea. You're up first to kick off race week. Good evening, Gamecock Larry. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I can hear you, the Clemson in your voices. Boy, y'all are so happy that the Gamecocks is down. Well, we should be down because we got a lot of them. Well, that ain't no excuse. But I'm going to tell you something right now. The best team in the ACC would have a hard time winning 2 out of 3 against our worst team in the SEC. So I ain't worried about all this. Y'all can talk bad about my Gamecocks all you want to. You can make all the fun you want to. You can be happy because Clemson is doing so good. That's all right. Gamecock Larry, just listen to you. I enjoy listening to you. But let me tell you something. Y'all, I don't think – oh, yeah, y'all talk about football. The four teams you called out – The Gamecocks have beat them all by 10 points this season. Tennessee, Clemson.
I tell you what, Gamecock, Larry, hate to interrupt, pal. We've got to hit a break here. If you'll hold on, we'll let you finish your point coming out of the other side of the break. We'll do that after this on Sports Talk. Back we are, Sports Talk, on a Monday night kicking off race week in South Carolina. Of course, we'll have plenty of coverage of the throwback weekend over at Darlington Raceway all week long, and of course, out at the racetrack this coming weekend with Goodyear 400 set for Sunday. Got to get into an interesting story this time regarding Iowa baseball in just a little while, but let's get back to the phones and let Gamecock Larry finish his point from a few minutes ago. Gamecock Larry, hated to do that to you, but appreciate you holding on.
That's all right. Let's put football aside. Let's wait a while. Let's finish this baseball season. The Gamecocks is going to be okay. We got to win at least four out of our six remaining SEC games. But I'm going to say we're going to win 5-1. That means we're going to win one series, sweep the other. And I think we're going to sweep Tennessee and Columbia. Now, we had it rough, but we're going to be okay. But I just want to get all the Clemson Tiger fans riled up. Tiger Mind, Chris and Pat started, and me and you can finish it. Let's get on this thing. I will take the Gamecocks over the Tigers anything in any day of the week. That's not all we've got to say. Love all y'all. Go Gamecocks.
All right, Gamecock Larry, appreciate that. A great way to kick off the program. Smitty, I'm trying to figure out, though, where we went wrong. Gamecock Larry ready to call us out, but this is, to be fair, this is a South Carolina team that's lost 5 of 6, and clearly, even Gamecock Larry, I think, can see that's not the same baseball club that we saw back in April.
Oh, that's what you just said is on the money. It's about injuries, and it's about inconsistent starting pitching. And Gamecock Larry may be right. They may right the ship. They may turn it around. And, you know, some of these players are going to come back. I don't know. I don't think anybody's out for the season. So I think South Carolina is going to get healthier. They'll probably regain that chemistry. But it's got to happen fast because there's only a couple of weeks left in the conference season, and then you've got to start playing your best baseball by the time you head off to Hoover. And the committee's making their decisions because I think the way college baseball has gone, you tell me if you're seeing it the same way. I think top to bottom, it's better than usual. Usually you can count the 4 seed out when in a regional.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that that's the case anymore. I feel like the bottom is better than it used to be. Teams, I guess, 50 through 70 in college baseball are a lot better than they used to be. And so I wouldn't count on things being easy when you get to a regional. I don't know that you can roll throw your gloves out there and beat the 4 seed in the first game and just count on that because I feel like there's just a lot of good mid-major competition out there. And I'm not picking on I guess what we're saying is I don't know what I said. That Gamecock Larry, maybe I'll try to make the point better than I did before. Will Sanders has not been as good this season as he was last, and South Carolina is still a top 10 program and 36-11 on the season and having a great year. Had an historic start and still having a great year. I think that's a compliment. I don't know any other way to put it. I'm complimenting the Gamecocks there. They are a top 10 team. They just have to play better baseball, or you don't want to be one of those teams that goes out there and wins 50 ball games, but you're not playing your best when late May rolls around. That's all.
I think that's well said. And on the flip side, the side of the coin that I think surprises everybody now, had we talked about this a month ago, was Clemson right now. Clemson's playing as well as anybody. Hard to overlook that. And so not saying that the Gamecocks don't have a shot to get to Omaha. They certainly do. This was a team we expected to be on automatic lock to get to Omaha just a month ago. They get everybody back healthy. They're still a very, very good baseball team. All right, let's stay on the phone lines here on Sports Talk on this Monday evening on the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number. By the way, we do have recruiting. you knew we'd have recruiting. We can't let our good friends over at Seawells go through a night without recruiting buffet. We'll get into that a little bit later. Jim Thoman answers some of these questions as well just after 7:30. But now let's say hello to Andy in Columbia. He joins us next here on Sports Talk. Good evening, Andy. Andy, what, are you with us? There we go.
I'm right here. Can you hear
me? Hey, bud. I can hear you fine now.
I got a riddle for you fellas. What's better than a KFF?
Better than a KFF.
How about a KFW?
Or an Maybe M. Bingo. That's five times better.
A corn-free week you like, huh? You are an advocate for a corn-free week.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up Seawells. I kind of looked at their menu because I'm going downtown Wednesday. Are they vacationing with corn? Because they're off today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. They're
closed. Wow. Pat's usually plugged into Seawells. Pat, do we know why they're closed the first half of this week?
I don't, and it doesn't actually mention on their website that it's a private party. Usually it'll denote whether it's a private party, and around the holidays it'll say that they're giving their staff a hard-earned vacation. So I'm not sure, not there, but maybe they're enjoying this nice weather too, or maybe they did hide in a corn suitcase. You never know.
Are they catering corn's vacation?
It would not surprise me if corn did not take Seawells with him on vacation.
Yeah, I'm guaranteeing it'd be roast beef every day for corn there. Now, Smitty, I had a question nobody really answered for me. I got for you while I got you here. You moved to Georgetown. Did you buy Ellis's house at Debidoo?
Oh, I did not. They will not let me in Debidoo.
Okay.
I went in. They ran my credit, and they told me I was not allowed in the gate. And I was like, okay.
So kind of, you put your chip in mowing, there and spit your chip back out and told you to get lost.
But I drive by Debidoo every day, and it is beautiful. You know, you have to have aspirations in life, and my aspirations is to get in there and visit. Not live there, of course. I'm not crazy. Just visit one.
It was just very close timing with Ellis moving back here and you moving there. I thought maybe you took over Ellis's place in Debidoo. So that's what I was curious about.
No, but I do love Georgetown, and I would recommend it to anybody.
It's beautiful.
It is. It's a beautiful town. Like, you know, kind of the fishing village vibe. I'm all about it. I've got to live by the water. It makes it a long drive up to Clemson when I've got to cover the Tigers, but it's worth it.
It's kind of like an old Mount Pleasant, before Mount Pleasant.
That's right. The way Mount Pleasant was before it exploded. That's right.
Exactly. When I used to live there. Now, regarding the South Carolina baseball team, I don't know who's worse, them or my Mets. I mean, the pitching on this team, I mean, you can sit here and say everybody's hurt and from the fielding and the plays in the field. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter who we'd have in the lineup when you give up 14 runs plus. And what did they give up? Every game this past series, they gave up runs in the first inning. I mean,
they've had six straight SEC games in which their opponent, either Auburn or Kentucky, scored first. And usually in the first inning, if not by the second inning.
And we're talking about the powers of the SEC there. You know, so something is blowing up in this pitching staff of ours. And the bullpen's not doing much better holding them off. So there's a deeper problem than just the injuries regarding the fielders, regarding this team.
Something, speaking of the bullpen, that I found interesting, South Carolina has announced its starting pitcher for tomorrow against North Florida. And, Smitty, they're going to go with James Hicks, who normally has been really, really reliable for them out of the bullpen during SEC weekends. I'm kind of surprised they want to use him on Tuesday, unless just to get him a little work, maybe a bullpen night against North Florida.
Yeah, I was going to say, remember, the last week they only had the guy throw one inning. So maybe he's just going to start and throw one or two, and you got a Tuesday start going into a Friday. I guess they're figuring it's enough rest for him to be prepared for the weekend. So I'm just kind of answering for Smitty, but Smitty might have a different answer.
No, I think that's right. I think that now that Kingston has shown that he'll try that. That way you can get somebody. You're killing two birds, right? You can get one of your key relievers a little bit of work. Hopefully, get your team off to a good start by getting a shutout, a shutdown inning, and then by the same token, you've got enough rest where let's say you might even give James Hicks Friday night off and just say, James, just get some ice on your arm and be ready for Saturday and Sunday.
Now, my last question for you gentlemen. I don't know if y'all have seen the Bob Huggins controversy.
We have.
Do you think West Virginia is going to use this to show Bob the door?
Whew.
Or is Bob too glued in being a West Virginia graduate and being there for how long now? Close, what?
Oh, wow.
15 years now? Because didn't he come 2 years before Coach Martin came to South Carolina?
I'd have to go back and check, but he certainly
Kansas State to West Virginia. Coach Martin became head coach of Kansas State and was there for how long? 2 years or 3 years before he got mad and came to South Carolina.
He's been here. He's been at West Virginia since 2007. So what's that? I guess this will be his 16th season, I guess.
Yeah.
16. Andy, the words he used, I don't know how he survives. That use of language in a public setting. I really don't. I don't see how he survives that.
Well, the guy who, reading it, not hearing it, but the guy that was doing the interview, Huggins took the bait and ran with it, didn't he? I mean, the guy laid it out and he threw it right out there for him. So, I don't know. I kind of hate to see it. I think he's a good coach, but the words that he used in today's society, I don't know how he survives it myself.
No, I don't either. And unfortunately, fortunately, we're not going to repeat what he said. If you want to see exactly what Andy is talking about, you'll have to look it up for yourself because it is not language that you can use in polite company for sure.
No, not at all. You guys, thank you very much for the time. Y'all have a great evening. I'll call you back later in the week. And, I saw Korn posted his recruiting on the website, so he's not completely disappeared, but, hopefully he does better spelling than he usually does now that he's on vacation.
Andy, we appreciate it, buddy. Thanks
y'all
for the call.
Have a good night, fellas.
All right, you Bye. Too. 888-898-2525. Again, 888-898-2525. And Smitty, I had not seen this until Pat posted it up on our InstaChat, and I pulled up the story from SI.com, and basically it's a anti-LGBTQ slur and several of them to describe Xavier fans. And I just don't understand what Bob Huggins or anybody put in that position is thinking of whether or not you wanted to comment, because he actually made the comments after he was asked about whether that occurred on a transgender night. And again, there's so much in this that is just not available for us to discuss, but just a generic point. You just cannot be, unless this is part of you, and maybe we're seeing the real Bob Huggins come out oftentimes, and I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but oftentimes that's the case. Well, if you say these things in public, that's usually what you think in private. So I just can't understand in this day and time how coaches just don't get it. I just don't.
Yeah, that's a great point, because a big part of being, and this is a lesson to anybody that's thinking about getting into coaching right now, because you and I, we're good examples of this. We see coaches in public forums all the time, right? What we see mostly when we interact with Dabo Swinney or Shane Beamer or any other prominent coach, it's, a controlled environment. They come, they are going to be asked questions, and they have to deal with it. Oftentimes, in a difficult situation, maybe being asked a difficult question. Your public persona is a big, big part of who you are, and you're representing a university. You're representing the university, and you are supposed to be an educator, and you are representing higher education. And as you just pointed out, you cannot be this dumb. You can do this if you are in certain, say, I'll stand on my own. I'll take any punishment. I'll stand on my own words. But when Bob Huggins goes out, he's wearing what? He's wearing that WV on his chest.
Mm-hmm.
And when he does that, that means everybody, the board of trustees there in West Virginia, you know, anybody that's everybody that's involved, all the educators that are there, they expect him to behave in a certain way and represent the university with class. And so beside the fact that he did himself a great disservice by speaking the way that he did, you can't have this. You simply cannot have this. And what I mean by it's a lesson anybody wants to get into coaching, a big part of who you are as a coach. To this day, we can quote people like Steve Spurrier or Lou Holtz or Dabo Swinney, things that they've said over the years, the way they've acted in public. That is a very large part of coaching. It's not just X's and O's. It's not just what you do on the sideline on a game day. It is how you present yourself to the public. And Bob Huggins failed in that regard. And to Andy's question, the more I think about it, the less likely I think he comes back. As you said, in this environment, it's 2023, you can't behave this way. The words he used, I think it's going to be a death knell. And Bob Huggins doesn't necessarily have a history of putting a lot of goodwill together, right? This is a guy who controversy has followed. He didn't graduate any players at Cincinnati. He's had controversies at West Virginia. I don't think he's in a position where they're going to look too kindly on this. It's not like he's somebody that is, you know, Andy mentioned he's a West Virginia grad, but he's not Coach K at Duke. He's not Dean Smith at North Carolina.
No.
I think he's going to have to fall on his sword here.
And guys, too, just a little bit more information as well. While you were talking, Smitty, and I agree with everything y'all are saying, I wanted to find out some contract details. So he got a contract extension back before the 2021 season. It actually ends this coming year. So he is only under contract for one more season. And a statement from the school's athletic department back when they gave him that extension in 2021 said, quote, Huggins will have the option to continue coaching past 2024 if he so chooses, or take an emeritus role within the department. His salary for the emeritus role will vary depending on when he stops coaching. He also, let's see, he'll be paid a little over $4 million this year as his salary. The buyout for the school would be roughly $2.5 million, but one would certainly think if they did decide to move on from him and use this as the reason that they'd be able to fire him with cause and get out of that buyout a little bit. But it is just another little interesting note that he is only currently under contract through this upcoming season.
And West Virginia has actually released a statement themselves saying Coach Huggins' remarks today on a Cincinnati radio show were insensitive, offensive, and do not represent our university values. Coach Huggins has since apologized. West Virginia University does not condone the use of such language and takes such actions very seriously. The situation is under review and will be addressed by the university and its athletics department. In other words, I think they are working behind the scenes already to get a buyout or just to outright dismissal with calls of Bob Huggins. I can't imagine he's going to be on the sidelines this coming winter for West Virginia. All right, 888-898-2525. If you'd like to join us here tonight again, 888-898-2525. South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number. More of your phone calls. Kyle Larson, also Jim Thoman to come tonight here on Sports Talk.
George Bryant here with Tsunami Bar Sports, and wow, Tsunami Robbie, there is now an amazing technology that you can use when you train receiving large game without having to endure pain. Please explain.
George, that is the magic combination. I have three simple words to define that entire concept. Stimulation, not annihilation. Regardless of your training goals, there is a level of stimulation that is optimal for your desired gains. Tsunami Bar's flexible bar technology meets these demands because the user determines the level of stimulation with the amount of speed and force they impart into the bar or training device.
Hey, this is Phil Kornblut. The Tsunami Bar is a terrific training device whether you're working on your fitness or your golf game. It's convenient, it's easy to use, and you won't feel beat up afterwards. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait. Order today.
Hi, I'm Jim Corbett. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years. There's one thing I've learned about injury cases. It's you need the personal touch. You need the lawyer to get to know you and describe your damages. You don't want a case manager talking to an insurance company and then talking to you and then talking to maybe to a lawyer with limited experience at the last minute to try to settle a case. I talk to you. I find out what your case is about. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com for your injury cases.
Imagine a scrapbook filled with all your favorite memories of 75 years of NASCAR gone by. Now imagine that scrapbook going 190 miles per hour.
Have you ever? No, I've never!
You don't have to imagine it. You need to get to Darlington, where the drivers of today tackle the track too tough to tame, just like they did your first time. NASCAR Throwback Weekend at Darlington Raceway, May 12th through the 14th. Get your tickets today at darlingtonraceway.com.
Race week here in South Carolina covered all week long here on Sports Talk as they'll go racing and go dancing with the Lady in Black this weekend over in Darlington. We'll hear from Kyle Larson on the program here tonight. Quick baseball update, and then back to the phones we go. After winning game one of their championship series in the South Atlantic Conference tournament over Lincoln Memorial by a score of 5-4, Newberry now in the bottom of the third inning has a 5-0 lead over Lincoln Memorial in a winner-take-all matchup for the championship of the South Atlantic Conference. So Newberry doing well now and looks in prime shape to advance on and claim that South Atlantic Conference championship in the tournament. And they've got an interesting setup with the best 2 out of 3 series up in Kodak, Tennessee. All right, let's stay on the phones before we hit the top of the hour. Squeeze in another call or two. Let's go over to Columbia, right behind where Pat is right now, and say hello to Ron in Columbia. Ron, you're up next here on Sports Talk. Good evening.
All right. I'm calling about the baseball. Has the university announced any time about where Hall is, if he's going to come back and when, the pitcher?
Smitty, you actually heard some stuff from Mark Kingston today. Is that correct, about Noah Hall?
Yeah, I'm looking through my notes. I don't know that I got information about Noah Hall. I'll have to look again.
So, Ron, while we search on that, anything else you'd like to know?
Yeah, I was wondering about how the second baseman that broke his arm. Is any time for him coming back?
Let's see, Smitty, I got some stuff you saw. Mark Kingston was on Columbia Radio earlier and said, mentioning Will McGinnis and also Matthew LeCroy, or Talmadge LeCroy instead, both could be in the lineup tomorrow. So we'll see. Braylon Wimmer getting close. May not play this week, yeah, but could be back next week. And evidently, Noah Hall, according to Mark Kingston, and again, this was from radio that he was on earlier today, said that Noah Hall is not close to returning to the lineup.
I tell you what, it's going to be hard to push that boy. They've got a shortstop out of the lineup now, though. I mean, he's hitting the ball better than as good as anybody they've got.
I agree, and I've always thought Michael Braswell was an extremely good defensive player, too. I mean, he's got great athletic skills.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, McGillis ought to be a DH, maybe, since he had that broken arm, and maybe put – actually, he's such a good shortstop. Actually, I think the more that this – what's his name – playing shortstop – has been just out right now. You have to excuse me. I'm a senior.
You're fine.
Lapses in memory. But anyway, I think he was a second baseman last year. And, I don't know. I mean, but.
Ron, let me go over that really quickly. So before the year began, we got to talk to Mark Kingston about this, and he wanted Wimmer to have a shot at playing shortstop, in part because of the opportunity to play there as a pro player, and he wanted to showcase that. But now, and look, he performed really well, but what you're pointing out is accurate too. If Braswell is playing so well, when Wimmer comes back, Wimmer has the ability to play in the outfield or second base. He's played both of those positions previously. So maybe you get your best 9 bats in the lineup by moving Wimmer somewhere else and leaving Braswell where he is.
Yeah, the more that they put in left field this week, I mean, I know not this series, but the one before, he hit well. But I tell you what, he fell right back into his old pattern, taking strikes and looking at too many of them. You know, in my opinion, I don't think I can't think of his name either, but, you know, they batted him number 5, I think. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I don't know. I tell you, let me tell you, they need all the sticks they can get in the lineup right now.
There's no doubt. Ron, we appreciate it. Thanks for the phone call.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Yes, sir. You have a good evening. And, Smitty, to your point, if they get Talmadge LeCroy back tomorrow, here's a guy who's batting 317 before he got hurt. Will McGillis is one of the top home run hitters on the team with 10. Maybe you can figure out a way to get Wimmer back in and also keep Michael Braswell in. It's a pretty awesome lineup the Gamecocks could compile when healthy.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
Monday night here on Sports Talk, hour number two, as we kick off race week. NASCAR making its return to the track Too Tough to Tame this weekend over at Darlington. We'll hear from Kyle Larson, an interview we conducted with the driver of the number 5 Chevrolet Camaro for Hendrick Motorsports. We'll do that in just a little while. Also get some headlines. We've got recruiting and Jim Thoman to talk some baseball with us at the bottom of the hour. 888-898-2525. Again, 888-898-2525. On the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number. And a quick follow-up, Smitty, to Ron's point about South Carolina, and you really start to understand what they are missing and what they missed this past weekend at Kentucky and what they missed the week before against Auburn. Talmadge LeCroy is the second leading hitter on the team at 317. I don't think anybody's catching Ethan Petrie, who's almost hitting 400. But he's cooled off in terms of the home runs, sitting at 21 on the season, which is a freshman record at USC. But still, 395 is your batting average is insane for a freshman. Then you have LeCroy, the number 2 hitter in terms of average. He's been out. Braylon Wimmer batting 299. He's 4th on the club in batting average. And then you also have Will McGillis, as I pointed out, batting 297. And he's a guy who's sitting on the bench with 10 home runs. And then you look at the pitching staff, and if Noah Hall is able to come back, what's the verdict on Jerzen Beck and those type guys? I mean, they are missing major frontline guys off that team. It would explain a good bit of their struggles here of late, especially offensively. The only concern I think that Mark Kingston probably has, taking all of that into consideration, and we'll try and get him on later in the week, let him speak for himself, but has to be the concerns about what is going on with Will Sanders and, of late, Jack Mahoney. You're number 1 and number 3, presumably, if Hall's in the mix. If not, right now you're number 1 and number 2 pitchers.
That's right. And look, and I was being, you know, somewhat critical of the starting pitching to open the show. But hold on. Let's say I take a different perspective and I look at it from the perspective of, you know, Auburn started playing really well right about the time they ran into South Carolina. And Pat mentioned during the break that Kentucky, now after sweeping the Gamecocks, is number 1 in RPI in the country. So they probably caught Kentucky at the wrong time. And then we also had all of those statistics about how hard it is to win on the road in the SEC. So maybe, if you look at it from an optimistic point of view, most of the players that you just talked about are coming back soon. If they can rebuild the chemistry that they had earlier in the season, and then maybe it's not that big a deal. Maybe it was just a bump in the road for Mahoney. Sanders hasn't been good all season, but if he can go out and give quality starts down the road, not be lights out, he doesn't have to go out there and pitch like Roger Clemens or Bob Gibson. Just go out, give quality starts, and when that offense is back together, you know that they're going to have your back. One of the things that can happen inside a clubhouse, too, is, and again, I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to I was being overly critical to begin. Now I'm going to lighten up a little bit. One of the things that can happen in a clubhouse is when you start to pile up injuries, it puts pressure on the pitching staff, and maybe when the fielders get healthier and the lineup gets healthier, that pitching staff just relaxes and builds a little confidence, says, you know what, let's reset a little bit. We hit a losing streak, not the end of the world. The 27 Yankees had a losing streak. Just go back out starting today, finish strong, and we're right where we want to be. So if I was critical to begin, it's only because they're coming off a sweep at the hands of Kentucky. And if I'm looking at it from an optimistic point of view for South Carolina, I think you can make the case that a deep breath, go get a midweek win, and then you know, start riding the ship and get some of these guys back healthy.
And that chance is tomorrow afternoon. It's an afternoon game over at Founders Park, 4 o'clock against North Florida. James Hicks will take to the mound for the Gamecocks. Other baseball going on this afternoon at the South Atlantic Conference Championship up in Kodak, Tennessee. They are in the bottom of the 4th inning. in a winner-take-all matchup of the best-of-three series. Newberry leads Lincoln Memorial by a score of 5-1. Meantime, the Women's Golf National Championships have gotten underway at various locales across the country, including both in Pullman, Washington, and in Athens, Georgia. We'll start east and move west. Athens, Georgia is where South Carolina currently is playing. The Gamecocks today shot a one-over par 289, and that puts them 10 shots off the pace in third place. Georgia blistered the course, as you might imagine they would. 9-under par 279. They hold a 9-shot lead over Ohio State, who's at even par, just a stroke better than South Carolina. Then you have Furman, who is also participating in the Georgia Athens Regional, and Furman shot a 9-over 297 today, so they are 18 shots back of the lead, and right now are 8 shots back of South Carolina. Also, the College of Charleston participating in the Athens Regional as well. They shot a 21-over par 309 today. They are in 11th place out of the 12 teams participating in the Athens, Georgia Women's Golf Regionals. Meantime, out in Pullman, Washington, they are through their first round as well. That's where Clemson is. And the Tigers had a pretty decent day. If you factor in Smitty, they shot 3-under par, 285. It's a solid day, right? It's got them in 7th place and 18 shots off the pace. Stanford must have been playing on the miniature golf course out in Pullman because they were 21-under par today, a 267, 5 shots better of Southern Cal. They were 16-under in Texas Tech at 11-under par. That golf course not quite as difficult, it appears, at least today. North Carolina, by the way, a +3. They were a 291. That puts them well off the pace. Kentucky in 9th place after shooting a -1, 287. And Green Bay bringing up the rear at 12th place, rather, at 23 over par. They shot 311 today. So that gets you caught up on the Women's Golf NCAA Regionals, which continue the next couple of days all over the country, including, as we pointed out, in Athens, Georgia, and also in Pullman, Washington. Story of the day, though, still has to be gambling in the sport of baseball. Now, we thought we had heard the last of it and the first of it in Tuscaloosa this past week. Smitty, we would be wrong, because it appears now that it has infested the state of Iowa, both Iowa, the University of, and also it appears Iowa State's under investigation, because several Hawkeyes sent out the Ohio State series this past weekend as the Iowa gambling authorities launch into an investigation. You played college baseball. Was there a whole lot of gambling going on when you played?
Not on the sport. On cards, sure. On a game of spades, yeah. No, this is fascinating. I heard you talking about this last week when the story, or 2 weeks ago when the story came out about Alabama. And Mike Morgan made light of it, too. And he said, what degenerates are out there betting on college baseball? But, you know, one of the things you'd have to say is, and I do follow this just somewhat. Years ago, you couldn't get a college baseball line at all, right? You know, online, right, or really, mm-hmm, anywhere. They weren't putting them up in Las Vegas. As time moved on, they started to put up lines for postseason play. So, you know, when the regionals started to come into play, then they would say it was prominent enough where they would post lines, and then they would take bets in Las Vegas on that. Well, as time has moved on, I think it was this year or last year, I started to see college baseball lines, the weekend series. Now, usually you weren't getting anything like a, you know, like an over-under, no totals, just something like South Carolina's playing LSU and LSU is a -120 favorite. Clemson's playing North Carolina and North Carolina is a -135 favorite. That's what you would get, and that's all there was. Well, now as we know, more and more legalized gambling, what do they want to do? Across the country, more and more states, mm-hmm, have legalized gambling. Well, what they want to do, the casinos, is encourage play. So now that college baseball is on ESPN, more exposure than ever before, it's popular. You can go out, you can see the teams play, you can bet on a game, and then get a beer and go to a bar and actually watch the game you bet on, which wasn't possible before. And you can do it, you know, even in the flyover states. So you ask, what has happened, what has changed? Well, what has changed is college baseball has become more popular, and it's funny. It's kind of like more money, more problems, right? You become more popular, and these are the issues run into. But still, having said that, what I heard about the Alabama story, absolutely bananas, just bizarre. that what went on there. And I don't have all the details for what's going on with Iowa. I shudder to even ask why they would sit two players, why Iowa had two notable players sit out the game. It's really, really getting concerning because, as I just mentioned, the more money you get involved, NIL, gambling, all of it, these are the problems you're going to have to, you know, to face.
Don't want to pick on, but they've earned the right to be picked upon, Alabama. But when the story broke about Alabama, how many of the gambling authorities and commissions across the country started to take a little bit harder look at gambling within college baseball? And maybe that's why on the heels of Alabama, we now see both Iowa and Iowa State having at least investigations on whether or not they've had players, coaches, whatever the case may be, gambling as well. We have no idea exactly. It appears that the Alabama situation was totally on their head coach, Bo Hannon, and nobody else. So it looks like none of the players there. But this doesn't look like it's the same type story, Iowa, because evidently starting DH Keaton Anthony missed the entire series, and that sort of sent up a red flag as to wondering why in the world he did not start the game. And the University of Iowa released a, due to a potential NCAA violation, we withheld some student athletes from competition. We will have no additional comments as this is an ongoing investigation. I guess my point is, Smitty, if the Alabama story had not broken last week, are we sitting here now this week talking about potentially two more schools under the microscope on baseball gambling?
Well, I think so, because usually the way this is flagged is it's usually, and this is what everybody can kind of, you can be comforted by this somewhat, even though it's a disturbing story. You know, these bets are going to be flagged. So if somebody walks in the door and nobody has bet on, say, you know, Iowa-Minnesota baseball, of course, I guess Minnesota probably doesn't have a team, you know, whatever it might be, Iowa against Penn State baseball, and somebody places a large bet against Iowa, that is flagged right away, and the commissions take it, and then they're the ones that end up contacting the Big Ten or the NCAA. So the one thing you can take, I guess, some comfort in is they're watching you, right? Mm-hmm. They're watching this. So it's hard to get away with anything because why? Because the casinos are the ones that don't want to lose the money. And if they see somebody walk through the door and it seems like they have insider information, they're going to get to the bottom of it as quickly as they can. They take that game off the board and they find out. So to your question, is there a microscope now on betting in college baseball? I think there could be from the NCAA perspective, but I would tell you those casinos have been watching every step of the way.
Guys, real quick, if I may. Sorry, Chris. I do want to point out, and if I'm understanding this right, and I want y'all's take too, I think there's a clear distinction we need to make here. The athletic or the gambling commission has not halted taking bets on either Iowa or Iowa State baseball games. That was something we immediately saw happen regarding the Alabama team, which immediately to me, reading between the lines, said, okay, somebody on the team, whether it's a player or a coach, is gambling on the actual team. The fact that, yes, I know they sat out these players, but that doesn't necessarily mean the gambling had anything to do with the baseball team. NCAA rules stipulate the NCAA athletes cannot gamble on any athletics. Again, this is just this is me just kind of thinking out loud here, but
no,
a few months ago in basketball, we had a pretty high caliber team from Iowa make it pretty daggum far in the NCAA tournament. I can't help but wonder if maybe these are old bets. But with what Smitty just said about Alabama, maybe now the NCAA and gambling places commissions started taking a deeper look into past bets as well. Because now this seems like, I'm reading quotes here from folks within both athletic departments, Iowa and Iowa State, saying that this is just the tip of the iceberg. But I do want to make that distinction, that they're still betting on baseball right now.
Exactly. You know what, Pat? That's a great distinction because I think what's the most important thing here is people understand, like, Iowa isn't throwing games like the 1919 Black Sox.
Right.
I think that's a really important distinction. What you're saying, Pat, is you think these could be Iowa players. They could have been betting on NBA games, college basketball games, football games, anything that would have gotten them in trouble because any of that is against the NCAA bylaws for an athlete.
Exactly. Well, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead.
I was going to say, to your point, Iowa State actually sent out a release today that said they've actually got wagering allegations involving 15 of their student athletes from football, wrestling, and track and field. So, yeah, I think you're right, Pat. This may not necessarily be baseball team gambling on baseball. It may be football teams or players gambling on another sport, or we may actually be going all the way back to the far, excuse me, heck, 2 years ago. Who knows?
And also with Iowa, they also released a statement this afternoon, sorry, Smitty, that 111 individuals from University of Iowa have been flagged in this investigation, 26 of whom are student athletes in either baseball, football, men's basketball, men's track and field, and wrestling, plus one full-time employee in the Iowa Athletics Department. They went on to say that the vast majority of the individuals are student staff, former student athletes, or those with no connection to UI athletics whatsoever.
Oh, that's good work, Pat. Yeah, I spent a month one weekend in Ames, Iowa, so I don't blame the kids for looking for a hobby, okay? But it's got to be a legal hobby. It must be legal.
Well, the question is, how much longer? If this is happening at Alabama on their baseball team with their head coach and happening at Iowa and Iowa State, how much longer is it going to be before we find out one, if not two or three of our teams here in the Carolinas are doing this? I mean, I can't imagine that this is an isolated event. I really can't.
Well, what I do believe they're running into, and look, the NBA's had their issues. You know, we don't need to dig into Major League Baseball or the past with some college baseball issues. But really, now I'd say that young adults are probably have more, with the internet and then so many more states legalizing gambling. I think the real issue you're running into is there are just so many more opportunities. I mean, previously, if you were a college basketball player, say playing alongside Larry Bird in Indiana State, you couldn't go anywhere and place a bet. You wouldn't, you know, with a local bookie maybe, but you weren't getting to a casino. But now with, you know, you can do it online, or half the places you travel to, they may take legal sports bets, and the guys get together, they're hanging out, you know, and they say, hey, let's go over here, hang out and place a few bets, which is the wrong thing to do. It's the wrong thing to do, but I'm just pointing out, you can't count on oftentimes 18, 19-year-olds making good decisions, and they're presented with this opportunity probably more now than ever before.
And let me play Phil Kornblut for just a second. It's all got to come back to NIL money. Right, Pat?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, you're not necessarily wrong. But there's going to be a learning curve here, like NIL.
I blame the transfer portal.
Now, guys, just like the portal, though, in NIL, there's going to be a learning curve, especially when dealing with younger individuals that maybe don't have the life experiences. They might not know necessarily what we think of as common sense. Okay, guys, you can't bet on sports. It's in the rules. You should know that. But are 18 to 22-year-olds going to necessarily have that common knowledge? Will that be common to them? So you're going to have a bit of a learning curve, and that's where I still like to push back and think that there are adults in the room who should be setting better examples here and doing a better job of enforcing such rules. But there's going to be student-athletes that are going to break this until something is actually firmly done about it, and the NCAA needs to take a hard stance. And I kind of hate to say it for these young men and women who may be involved, but they may get quite a stiff punishment just to send a message to prevent further athlete or future athletes from doing the same.
Well, that's a good point. And once it was Alex Karras and I think Paul Horning, Chris, you might remember that better than I do, that they were suspended for a whole season from the NFL. I don't believe they were doing anything, you know, nefarious or illegal. They just were betting at a casino and got caught. Mm-hmm. And I believe Willie Mays even got in trouble once for just doing a meet and greet at a casino, because at that point, major sports did not want anything to do with casinos and gambling. Just a hard line. And to your point, Pat, in the past, the penalties have been very, very stiff. And I'm afraid that these young men, they made this mistake, and I've got a bad feeling they're all going to lose their eligibility permanently.
And the one thing sports can't have is people starting to not believe that they are actually being dictated and played on the field, and the outcome and results aren't predetermined.
That's a good way to kill the golden goose right there.
There's no
question. I was going to say, to me, but between these two stories, if the Iowa players were betting on, say, the NBA or some other things that had nothing to do with their games, it's bad. They're going to get in trouble, and it's going to be a black mark. But the situation with the Alabama coach potentially giving insider information about his own team against LSU, it's a good thing he got fired, because as you just pointed out, Chris, you have to be able to tell the American viewing public what they're watching is real, or it's all pro wrestling.
All right, 888-898-2525. If you'd like to hop on board with us here this evening, Jim Thoman right around the corner. We'll get his take on what he witnessed over the weekend. Gamecocks at Kentucky, Clemson taking on Louisville. Also, what's going on with Coastal? 14 consecutive Sunbelt Series victories for the Chanticleers, and boy, do they have a big one on a Wednesday with the Clemson Tigers. Slide out for a timeout. When we come back, though, it is recruiting time, and we've got a whole buffet's worth next.
Major Downer here from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Boating season is just around the corner. To make sure that your boat is ready, check your registration sticker and ensure it's current. Find your registration card, make sure your life jackets are in good shape, and check your fire extinguisher as well. For more information on boating or boat titling questions, visit dnr.sc.gov/boating.
Life, it has its ups and downs. Sometimes it's little things like hitting every red light or dropping your cell phone. Maybe it's the bills, rent, or pressure at work. But when it comes to the South Carolina Education Lottery, you should never feel like playing will solve everything. The lottery is a game. It's played for fun. So set a dollar amount. Expect not to win and make sure responsibilities, family, friends, and work come first. Visit PlayResponsiblySC.com.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Listen. Never had a chance to ask this question, Pat. How long has Phil used this song in particular as the recruiting bumper? Do you know?
I implemented this and I don't know, at least a year, maybe two? Okay. Or are you thinking it's from before when you joined?
No, I'm just curious because anytime I think it has sort of become the fabric of recruiting. Anytime you hear that, you know it's time for the recruiting report.
Well, Chris, I've got OCD. I've got OCD, and I'm all about uniformity. So I like having a certain music to a certain segment, and then it makes sense to me, and hopefully our listeners appreciate it. But we have used this for a while. If that's a hint to look for a new one, I'll get right on it.
No. I like it. Like I said, I think it attaches nicely to recruiting, which is always brought to you by our good friends at Seawells. Closed for the first couple of days of this week, but when they reopen, the best daily luncheon buffet for you. Plus, they handle everything you could possibly imagine with regards to catering. All you have to do is log on to SeawellsCateringSC.com. Again, SeawellsCateringSC.com or call 803-771-7385 as Seawells presents tonight's recruiting report. Running back and defensive end were the positions South Carolina focused on last week with three reported official visits from transfer prospects. Hale McGranahan of the Big Spur reported transfers, running back Logan Diggs of Notre Dame and also defensive end Jatias Gear of Syracuse made official visits with the Gamecocks over the weekend, and also transfer running back Demi Sumo Karangabaya of NC State visited midweek. Diggs has also visited Ole Miss. He's a Louisiana native, and LSU is expected to be a major factor as well. Gear is a product of Belton Honeyapath, and the Gamecocks appear to have his complete attention for the transfer. Safety Kai Sanders has USC in his top 10 that he released over the weekend. The others are Notre Dame, Syracuse, Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Miami. Sanders has an official visit with the Gamecocks set for June. Wide receiver Channing Goodwin of Charlotte, who had USC on his short list, has committed to Michigan. USC offered 2025 wide receiver Quincy Porter of Oradell, New Jersey. Clemson and USC target 2025 offensive tackle David Sanders of Charlotte has been offered by Oregon. Former USC reserve offensive lineman Colin Heinrich is transferring to Georgia State. In basketball, CAA leading rebounder 6'7 Frankie Policelli signed with the College of Charleston as a graduate transfer. He played the last two seasons at Stony Brook and led the league last season with nearly 9 rebounds per game along with 14 points an outing. He played his first first two seasons at Dayton. 6'10", Drayton Jones of Oak Hill Academy, committed to South Carolina State. 6'11", Cooper Bowser, who played for Sunrise Christian Academy in Wichita, Kansas, signed with Furman. Bowser, who's a native of Woodbridge, Virginia, averaged 9 points, 5 rebounds, and just over an assist per game this past season. And 6'1", Joe Girard, has spent his collegiate career playing for the Orange, and he'll continue doing so. He announced on Twitter late yesterday morning that he'll transfer from Syracuse to Clemson. And that is tonight's recruiting reports presented by Seawells. Jim Thoman and some baseball talk up next here on Sports Talk. Monday evening here on Sports Talk. Chris, Pat, and Smitty with you up until 8 o'clock. You're welcome to be a part of the program. Love to hear from you at 888-898-2525. And don't forget, if you happen to lose us over the airwaves on one of our great affiliates, you can log on and see us on our YouTube stream tonight, just Pat and myself. You can also listen live at sportstalkfc.com. And don't forget to check out us on Twitter as well, at Sports Talk SC. Baseball rankings this week came out a bit earlier today. Baseball America has the Gamecocks at number 6, Coastal Carolina number 8, and Clemson at number 18. D1 Baseball, Gamecocks also 6th there. Coastal remains 8 in that poll, and Clemson 16th in D1 Baseball. And Perfect Game has the Gamecocks at number 5, CCU at number 8, and Clemson at number 10. So taking those rankings right there, feel pretty confident we're going to have some June baseball around here in South Carolina. But a man who would be able to tell us much more about June baseball and certainly being successful at the highest level in D1 baseball, our good friend joining us once again, started last week. He'll be with us throughout the remainder of the baseball season. We say hello to Jim Thoman, joining us here on Sports Talk tonight. Coach, how you doing? Welcome back into Sports Talk.
Hey, guys. I'm doing great, man. Doing great. I heard Phil was on vacation. Must be nice. Must be nice.
We can only take so much of corn, so we have to send him away every now and then. We actually sent him out of the country this time, so we'll see if he comes back.
Holy cow, that's crazy.
So how was your week?
Stuff going on in college baseball right now. It's getting crazy, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and this was as crazy a weekend as possible, especially in the SEC. So let's start there. What was your sense of what's going on with South Carolina being swept for the first time this season and losing all three at Kentucky?
Well, you just can't play great every weekend, and South Carolina pretty much up until the Auburn series was maybe the top team in the country. So they're going through a hard time right now, but I think once they get healthy, I mean, you're looking at second baseman, third baseman, and shortstop, which also affects who's catching, and then they got a couple of arms down. They just got to get healthy, and I think things will be fine, but it's always been difficult for us to go to Kentucky and play. It's just, even though they have the new ballpark and it's really, really nice, I remember going there way back when I was with Coach Tanner at South Carolina, and the ball just seemed to fly there, and it was very difficult to win. It's usually cold there, but give credit to Kentucky. I think they're number one in the RPI, so it isn't like South Carolina is losing to the Sisters of the Poor right now. they lost 2 out of 3 against Auburn. And Auburn can really swing the bats. And Kentucky, I think they have the number one strength of schedule as well. I mean, they're a good program, and they're hot right now.
You talked about the injuries to Lee Croy and Wimmer, and also, of course, Will McGillis, who was having such a fabulous year, especially hitting the long ball with 10 home runs before he got hurt. In your mind, is it just as simple if those guys get healthy, plug them back in the lineup, and the Gamecocks will revert to the team we saw in March and April for the most part?
Well, I have no doubt that Coach Kingston and Coach Lee are going to get it going. I mean, they're going to, you know, they've had a great year, and this is just a bump in the road. There's a lot of hurdles. and you just got to keep jumping over them. But you're looking at, it wasn't just, I mean, you got McGillis out at second base and LaCroix out at third and Wimmer out at short, but that also, it also moved Messina from catcher to third. So it affected, you're talking about four positions on the field. Okay. So yeah, the pitchers need to get back to pitching like they were, but I think when we can get LaCroix back at third, Wimmer back at short, McGillis at second, have a normal lineup with Messina catching, I just feel like the things are going to start clicking again. And you know, all year long, Petrie, he might be the National Freshman of the Year, and he's going through a little bit of a lull. So once he gets back on track, I really feel like Wimmer coming back, which he will eventually – LaCroix and McGillis are almost ready to come back. You'll get Messina back behind the plate where I think he's a little bit better back there. And you know, he's handling the pitchers really well. I mean, the ERA was in the top 15 nationally, and it was one or two in the SEC for a while. And that was with Messina back there catching. So the guys that have replaced our guys that have been hurt have done a nice job. But once we get back them three players, I think the pitchers will feel a little bit better when you're on the mound and you have your best shortstop and your best second baseman, your best third baseman, your best catcher, and you have your best defenders out there. I think that's something the pitchers will welcome. So I'm ready for the game to get hot.
Well, they might, Coach. Jim Tobin joining us as he does every week here on Sports Talk. And, Coach, you know, you just mentioned that the pitchers might feel a little bit more comfortable. And what I find so interesting is this midweek game coming up. Now the Gamecocks, they need a win, right? They almost like you want a palate cleanser. You want to win a ball game. So when you were meeting, say, you and Ray Tanner were coaching together, how did you approach a game like this where you – I know you want to win every game, but is there a bit of an extra focus and maybe you throw a guy, that a reliever you normally would have held for the weekend and throw him here because you think we need these guys to get that winning feeling back a little bit?
Yeah, you have a tendency to want to do that, but you got to also – you know, you got to keep in the back of your mind that, you know, you got six conference games left and you know, you're trying to win four or five of them. So you can, you know, right now in our case at South Carolina, we're trying to hold on to that national seed. If you can finish in the top eight and you win a regional, you know, you're guaranteed to host the super. So there's a lot on the line right now. And yeah, the midweeks are important, but so are the weekends. So there's a balance that you have to look at there. And I think all the players, I think they know that, it's time, it's go time right now, and it's time to get back to where we were and get that good feeling going again and had great chemistry. And I just feel like it's going to happen. I said, I just feel like, of course, I'm always positive, but I'm looking forward to seeing it happening.
And, you know, Coach, look, if you don't have starting pitching, you don't have anything, and the starting pitching has struggled a bit recently. Do you think, you know, you could tell us more about the, you know, coaching through an entire season than we'll ever know. What is this a case of tired arms, perhaps? What do you do as a coach when you start seeing your starters struggle? Do you think maybe of giving them a you know, lighter work during the week? How do you handle it?
Well, be honest with you, I'm not a pitching guru or anything, although I've done a little pitching. I was a pitching coach for a while with Coach Tanner. That was a lot of blame days there because I recruited and did pitching at some point. If the pitchers were bad, it was my fault. If the hitters were bad, it was my fault. If we lost, it was my fault. It's a lot of blame days. But I don't think they're so much tired as you know, sometimes you need to, you know, catch your breath. And I know they do a great job with the pitching coach and making sure that the players' arms are fine and they stay in the weight room throughout the year with Billy Anderson. And I just have a feeling that you're going to have some ups and downs during the year. It's very difficult to go from game one to game 56 and be really good, you know, the whole time. The key is to get hot again. And now's the time. You know, when the regionals come, that's when you want to be at your best. So I feel like we'll get these guys healthy. I think the pitchers will feel better when they have everyone in the lineup. I think the team will feel better. I think they just need a couple wins to get back to where they were. But I don't think the pitchers are tired. I just think that, you know, sometimes you run into a hot team, and obviously the last two weekends you're looking at teams that can really swing the bat. Let's see what happens midweek, and then we got to go to Arkansas, which is never easy. I think they're in the top five in the RPI again, and they got a really good program. The good thing, I think, Tennessee is hot, but they're not very good on the road. I think Tennessee is 2-11 on the road, so that's our last series. You always want to, you know, win a few games late and have some momentum going into the conference tournament. But, you know, the season has, you know, it's right now is where everything counts, and I think we're going to get healthy and we're going to get it going. You just got to you know, the players have to realize that it's go time now, and it's time to get healthy, and it's time to make a run, because this is a team that can finish in Omaha for sure.
Coach, look, two more nationally ranked teams in our state, Clemson and Coastal Carolina, and they're playing against each other on Wednesday. Clemson off to a slow start this year, but it's gone well recently. You obviously, you took a couple of jobs, and so you had to go through that first year. Was the slow start because it was Eric Bocic's first year with that group, or you know, what are the challenges of that, and why do you think they played so well recently?
Well, you know, sometimes it takes a while to get adjusted to a new coach, and I know Coach Bocic, and I know Nick Schnabel, their assistant. He was one of my assistants at Liberty, and they're really good coaches. But I think the reason they're playing better now, I think they're relaxed. They had nothing to lose. I think they started 2-8 in the ACC. And I think they've just come together. I think a big key was getting that the big lefty on the mound. You know, he was a hitter, and now he's a pitcher. He's both. But he's a legitimate one or two guy for him, and their bullpen's been pretty good. But they're on a little bit of a roll right now, and I think the reason they're playing well is I think they figured out, you know, that they need to pitch the big lefty, and that you know, they're getting some new guys really swinging the bat well for them. They got a center fielder over there, a freshman that's really good that Monty Lee recruited, and you know, Monty had really good players. He did a really nice job recruiting, and so I'm not surprised that Clemson has got it going, and really, honestly, I'm hoping and I really think that Coastal and South Carolina and Clemson, all three teams in the state, should and will be hosting a regional. So that'll be fun for the in-state fans.
Yeah, and of course, we'll be there. Coach, we'll let you go on this one. You know, I think it raised a lot of eyebrows. A lot of us were surprised to see there was a gambling problem there at Alabama, and then now Iowa State seem to have gotten ensnared into something too. I mean, what did it say to you? What was your reaction to somebody that's in the industry to know that a coach like down at Alabama had actually gotten caught up in something like this?
Yeah, we really don't know what the details of how it went down, but I think that it just seems like gambling all around has become legalized in a lot of states, and it's still against the NCAA rules to gamble in your own sport. So it's always been a thing with compliance. So when I was coaching, that's the first thing you knew not to do is gamble. So I never gambled on football, baseball, basketball, whatever. I don't think about 40 years. I'm not going to say I didn't do it when I was, you know, 25 years old, but I learned after about two or three bets that I wasn't a good gambler, so I shut that down pretty good. But I feel bad for you know, the coach that was involved. He's a good person, a good man. He just got tied up in something. I'm not sure exactly what went down, so I'm not one to lay blame on anyone or judge anyone. So hopefully he can get that straightened out. Alabama seemed to rally behind that, and they beat, you know, they beat Vanderbilt 2 out of 3, and I mean they're looking like they're going to be in a regional now. I mean the SEC is you're looking at 10, maybe even 11 teams. Georgia has some work to do, but you talk about the strength of the SEC. Just so people understand this, there's 14 teams, and 12 of them make the SEC tournament. The two teams that won the national championship the last 2 years are Mississippi State and Ole Miss. And right now, they're 13 and 14 in the SEC. They may not even make the SEC tournament. And you're talking about two teams that won the national championship in the last 2 years. So the conference is incredibly good. And it's looking like 10 or 11 SEC teams in the regional, and once again, the ACC is doing well. You know, I think those 7, 8, or 9 will make the regional. So it's a heck of a league, and looking forward to the next couple weekends and then the tournaments and a lot of stuff going on. A little shout out. I think the women's softball team is, I think they play tomorrow in the SEC softball tournament. I think they're playing Texas A&M at 2 p.m. and I think they have 34-35. The Gamecock softball team is having a good year, and hopefully tomorrow they'll be able to beat Texas A&M in the first round.
That's when the SEC tournament will start. Actually, on Wednesday is when they'll play Coach at 2 o'clock against Texas A&M. And you were right, 34 victories for Gamecock softball. Before we let you go, you dropped some Toman's notes on us last week. You have a couple of nuggets you want to pass along before we say goodbye for this week?
Yeah, I wrote down some nuggets. One of them, you're talking about a team, Ole Miss, that may not make the conference tournament, right? They had a player last weekend, Kelvin Harris, that hit 4 home runs against Missouri. But not in the series. It was 4 home runs in 1 game. I thought that was tremendous. Then the other thing, is, which I think is pretty big, going back to softball, I know I'm a baseball guy, but there is a player at the University of Florida that her name is Skylar Wallace. And for anyone that doesn't know anything about softball, she has video game numbers. She's hitting .455. She's got 18 jacks. She's walked 46 times and only struck out 13, which is an unbelievable ratio. And in baseball, if you're 1-to-1 walks to Ks, you're a pretty good hitter. Well, she has 46 walks and only 13 Ks, 66 runs. She has 30 stolen bases. I don't know what her problem was. She got caught once, so she's 30 out of 31 on the bases. And but anyway, that's kind of crazy. She's a left-handed hitter, and that's just unbelievable. I've never seen numbers like that, but she might be the best player in the country, so she'd be worth going to Arkansas just to see that. We're watching on TV. I'm sure it's on TV this week. And I think Tennessee is the number one seed in the softball tournament this year. So hopefully the Gamecocks get a chance to play them and beat them.
Jim Toman, our guest here tonight. He'll join us every Monday at this time, talk a little baseball as we get ever closer to conference tournament time and the NCAA tournament. Coach, as always, we appreciate the time so much, especially the little nuggets. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, guys, you take it easy. Tell Cornblue to get on bat. He's the guru.
He is indeed. We appreciate it, Coach. All right, that's Jim Toman. And he was talking about Skylar Wallace. As a team, Florida, Smitty, is 81 of 87 in stolen bases. They like to run. They certainly like to run. And two of their players have 54 of those 81 stolen bases. Kendra Falby is the other one. She's batting just .392 on the year. All right, quick timeout. We'll come back and wind things down this Monday race week here in South Carolina. Back to a finish checkered flag here on Sports Talk.
Founders Federal Credit Union knows your life is busy and your money is important. We are proud to offer local personalized services and convenient online services like Founders Online and the Founders app. You'll love being with us as much as we love serving you. Visit RelaxJoinFounders.com or one of our 37 convenient locations to see if you qualify for membership with Founders. Relax. Win with Founders. Terms and conditions apply. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
Hi, folks. This is Mike Morgan. I want to tell you about an exciting new product from my friends at Vision Air Solutions. Staying healthy in my line of work is so critical and probably in yours as well. A large factor in all that is making sure we're breathing in healthy and safe air every day. That's where Vision Air Solutions comes in. They make sure your home has air purification for all the air pollution you can't see. Viruses, mold, bacteria, stale odors, cooking smells, and volatile organic compounds. They make sure your home is full of clean air and also offer HVAC duct cleaning and sanitation as well. Make sure you and your family are breathing clean air today by giving Vision Air Solutions a call today. 803-220-1811. That's 803-220-1811. Tell them Mike sent you.
All right, college baseball, Newberry trying to close it out in the SAC championship, basically game now. The two teams split games 1 and 2 in their best of three series up in Kodak, Tennessee. And in the top of the seventh, it's Newberry 6, Lincoln Memorial 4. And don't forget to log on to our Twitter page. Poll question of the week at Sports Talk SC is odds have been released on the Gamecocks as underdogs to North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, and also Clemson. We ask you, what's the best bet for a straight-up upset? You log on and participate up on our Twitter page at Sports Talk SC. Not enough time to bring you the Kyle Larson interview we did, so we'll hold that over until tomorrow. Kerry Tharp will also be with us as we really get neck-deep into coverage of Darlington Race Week. But, Smitty, before we go, I saw this story. Phil left this one for us, and God bless him for doing so because this is fascinating to me. The NCAA Men's Basketball Rules Committee acknowledged on Friday, they've got a desire to change the standard for a legal guarding position. That's right, the block charge call, which has always been very, very controversial. The recommendation would force a defender to gain position before a ball handler plants his foot to leap into a shot attempt. A defender who arrives after that foot is planted would be assigned a blocking foul if a collision occurred. Previously, the defender, of course, merely had to be in position before the player was in the air, as it is all but physically impossible for a person to stop the process of jumping, of course, once it's initiated. The offensive player was at a clear disadvantage, according to the story, in these situations. It is an extremely hard call for officials to get correct 9 times out of 10, and I'm curious if the NCAA has looked at this about the controversy with regards to a couple of NBA players who got hurt, Giannis being one of them, in a block charge situation, Smitty, and they want to prevent that from happening in the NCAA. I don't know if this makes it, in your mind, does this make it easier for the officials, more difficult for the officials, or is it just more minutia they've got to go through to try and figure out how to defend somebody in basketball these days?
Yeah, in the annals of history, philosophy, and politics, nothing means less than the rules in basketball. If you ask a referee why they made a particular call on a block charge play, they will tell you about everything except the rule. They talk about, well, this player initiated the contact, and this player didn't have a legal guarding position. I felt like this player, essentially what it is they go through the game, 9 out of 10 are going to be blocks. They call one charge, and it's always in favor of a Duke player. So as far as I can tell, the rule has never meant anything. It's always just a personal opinion from an official about the way it's going to be, and you might as well flip a coin about the way they're going to call it. I've kind of given up on trying to figure out what the referees want because I've seen it in all different ways. I've seen players moving. I've seen players – I've heard officials say that, well, he didn't really take a, you know, you have to take a real shot. you know, there has to be physical, real physical, fierce contact. Right, right. I've heard everything. I've heard Steve Javy talk around it. They don't seem to know. All I know is when I look at it, I know about 9 out of 10 are going to be charges, and one's going to be they're going to call against the offensive player, and usually it's Draymond Green at the bottom, and I can't figure out which one is which. But I agree with what your overall point. You do say that what the NCAA is trying to do is they're trying to give some guidance here to the officials, and essentially what it sounds like to me is there's going to be no charges.
Exactly.
The charge is going to be like a sighting of a bald eagle. It's just going to be so rare. They're giving all the advantage to the offensive players. Let's see if that backfires or if it works for the officials. I'll just withhold judgment. If you can tell in my voice, I don't have a lot of confidence that NCAA basketball officials are going to get this right.
No, and I agree. And all we need is to make it more difficult to play defense in any sports. All right, Smitty, Pat, enjoyed it tonight. Folks, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Have a great rest of your Monday.